It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Wade Goodwin, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. Fly fishing. You see it in the movies or on TV. A guy is looking through a big magnifying glass tying a little itty-bitty fly, and I think to myself, fly fishing seems like a lot of work. Not so, says my guest today. It's a pleasure and an art, and once you get started, you may never want to stop. This hour On Point, Fly Fishing for Dummies. Sure, I'll try it, but can I just buy my flies? You can join the conversation. Have you got the fly fishing bug? Could you explain it to the rest of us? Bait fishermen, are you ready to take it higher? Joining me now from Santa Fe, New Mexico, is Taylor Streit. He's a lifelong fly fisher and guide. He lives in beautiful Taos, New Mexico, and owns a fishing shop there. He's also written articles about his own fly fishing adventures. He's written several books, including Man vs. Fish, The Fly Fisherman's Eternal Struggle, and Instinctive Fly Fishing. Taylor, nice to have you on the show.
Hello, Wade.
Hello. Taylor, it occurs to me that fly fishing maybe is a little like golf or hunting. It's something that your father takes you out when you're a young boy and teaches you how to do. How did you get started?
I think that's exactly the way my father did take me when I was real little. I think we started bait fishing first, and then that kind of grew into fly fishing, and that's a point I make in my book that tends to make the better fly fisherman one that starts out fishing with worms.
Well, you know, I'm in Texas, and we do a lot of bass fishing down there. And in fact, I was just on a lake that is called Falcon Lake, which has been named the number one bass fishing lake in the country. And, you know, there's lots of $60,000 and $70,000 bass boats being pulled by $40,000 pickup trucks and thousands of dollars worth of rods and reels and instruments on the boat. But ironically, bass fishing is considered a working class sport, a working man sport, and fly fishing, where you need your waders, is considered more of an elite sport. It seems a little counterintuitive.
Well, when you're in the fly fishing business, you certainly see that, and we try and dispel that. You know, there's been an awful lot of over centuries, there's been a lot of mystique attached to fly fishing to make it, elitist, I think is the word. And we have a big old party we're guiding today who a bunch of teenage kids who don't know a Royal Coachman from an Adams or a dry fly from a wet fly. And they caught fish yesterday, and they were just all giggling and having a good old time, and they didn't know about any of that mystique stuff, and were perfectly happy. You know, the thing about the sport is there's a lot of different ways you can go at it, and just going out and catching fish is certainly a possibility without dragging around all of the mystique.
Well, in bass fishing, it's about how many fish you catch and how big they are and how hard they fight. But it seems to me that fly fishing has different values than that. What, one of them being that you're simply out in nature in the creek.
Well, that's true. And the casting itself is kind of, you know, you can just enjoy the casting. To have a good cast is not an easy accomplishment. I mean, you can catch fish with a weak cast, a poor cast, but getting the fly out there is a pretty poetic move, you know. a lot different. It's a lot different operation than casting with conventional with a spinning gear or casting gear.
And how long does it take to learn how to cast? I mean, could I do it in the first time I try it, I go out there, or will it take longer than just a one-time fishing trip?
Well, you know, some people take to it, and we can usually spot those. I mean, we in our when we guide people, that I mean, that's part of the deal. The goal is to get them to catch fish. Well, they need to be able to cast to do that. So we teach them to cast as best we can, and you can kind of tell right away. Actually, what happens is that a big detriment to good casting is people that have done a lot of bait casting or spin casting, because the fly cast is a different motion, whereas the a conventional cast is more of a snap of the wrist up high where you're winging some heavy spoon or a glob of worms or something. A fly cast is a really totally different motion.
Well, I've got my – all right, so when I'm bass fishing, I've got the rod in my right hand, and I've got my thumb on my button on the reel, which I press mm-hmm. and hold. I bring it back, and as I throw, I let the button go, and it flings the line and the hook out. Now, what is it like? How do you fly fish?
Well, the fly has no weight. You know, you're casting the weight of that item, you know.
The spinner bait, yeah.
Right. And the fly has no weight. So it's the fly line, the thick fly line, and that's the one you see gracefully flying through the air, hopefully gracefully. And the fly, the line kind of brings the fly along with it. And at the end of the line, there's a leader of clear material that allows the fly to land without alarming the fish, and you know, the fly's just kind of along for the ride because you can't wing it out there.
And do you hold the line in your left hand? I think I remember seeing a line in the left hand. How do you do that?
Yeah, that's when we're teaching people. That's certainly a big factor, is what you do with your left hand, because you're making the cast with your right hand. But the left hand is taking line out of the reel. It's taking line in when you're bringing the slack line in. And so getting both of those hands in play is kind of walking, chewing gum kind of deal. And usually if we take people fishing for, say 2 days, in that period of time, they'll have those mechanics down. And, you know, we love to teach people, because if left on their own, when people self-teach themselves to cast and deal with the slack line and everything, they'd do some pretty crazy things. I had a guy that was guiding not long ago who would take up the slack line and put it in his mouth, and so he had bite marks all over his line.
Tim is calling from Liberty, Kentucky. Tim, welcome mm-hmm. to the show.
Hey, Wade, how's it going, guys?
It's going great.
I sold my bass boat and all my junk and bought a canoe so that I could fly fish from it in some of the smaller streams here in central Kentucky. Got started fly fishing kind of as a youngster during a trip to Wyoming. And I started teaching it at a local middle school here, where my late wife was a school teacher for quite a while. And I had a ball with that, teaching the kids. Had a lot of good sponsors, you know, from a lot of companies would send us, you know, rods and line and all kinds of stuff to help get it going. But, you know, you were talking about casting the spinnerbait while ago and using the wrist. I call that Zebco syndrome. And I've had a lot of guys that I've actually had to tie the rod to their arm to get them to cast with their arm instead of their wrist, because they get these really big wide open loops and the line piles up and wind knots and the leaders and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's one of those things where when you sit down and you start tying flies and you take a little bit of fuzz and some feathers and dryer lint and whatever else you want to use, and you put together a thing that looks enough like a live insect that when you put it on the water, a fish tries to eat it. There's no better kick in the world, man. I mean, that's awesome. that you were able to actually pull that off.
Tim, what prompted you to move from bass fishing into fly fishing?
The simplicity, to be honest with you. I mean, you don't get backlashes and bird's nests, you know, in the fly reel. I suppose it could be done if a person really, you know, put some extreme effort into it, but I've never done it personally. Another thing is it's the near silence. I mean, the only thing that you really hear besides birds and, you know, breeze and the leaves and all that kind of is the whisper of that line passing back and forth just slightly over your head. And, you know, it's like heroin. I mean, once you get started at it and it really starts to take hold of you, it's hard for you to drive over a bridge and look down a stream without wanting to pull the car off the road and get in the trunk and get the rod out and your vest and, you know, head down there and make a few casts on your way to wherever it is you're going. Because it's just, like I said, it's the whisper of that line, it's the quietness of it, it's the simplicity of it. You don't have a lot of complicated, you know, technical equipment that you're using that can foul up or mess up or anything like that. It's something that you, to a great extent, are creating out of your own imagination when you're making your flies and using your own abilities to copy what you see in nature, you know, matching the hatch and all that sort of thing. To be able to copy those things and do it with your hands. And then take that little tiny little thing that you have put together on your own and tie it on that tippet and take it out there and put it on the water. And within a matter of seconds, a fish is on it.
Taylor, I don't know that you could have a better endorsement for fly fishing than you just got from Tim. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. I'm Wade Goodwin in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Talking about the zen of fly fishing. I don't know how to fly fish, so I'm practicing the zen. My guest is Taylor Streit, fishing guide, fishing author, and himself an avid fly fisherman. The 2001 movie Salmon Fishing in the Yemen, a wealthy Yemeni tribal leader, a sheik, gets this crazy idea to bring the sport of fly fishing to his country, and he hires a young Scottish fisheries expert, played by Ewan McGregor, to build salmon runs in the desert. Here, the sheik, played by Amour Waqid, describes to McGregor his dream of bringing salmon and peace to his country.
For fishermen, the only virtues are patience, tolerance, and humility. I like this. I have a dream that one day, when the talk turns to what the Israelis did to the Palestinians, the Afghanis to the British, my tribe to their tribe, when voices grow heated and war is in the air, then someone will say, "Gentlemen, let us arise and go fishing."
Taylor, let us arise and go fishing.
Well, as Tim was saying, he brought up a lot of stuff, and one thing that he's really he got really hooked by the sport, and it's so common for people to be obsessed, I think is the word, and that's the this vision I think you have of guys peering in their box, their fly box, and devoting their entire life. For instance, like in the recession, when was that? A few years ago, our business, fortunately, was pretty much recession proof because the last thing that a fly fisherman would give up was going fishing. And people get pretty far around the bend about fly fishing. I mean, regular fishing, sure, but fly fishing, this carries it to a new level a lot of times.
How integral a part of tying your own flies is it?
Well, we have a fly shop, so we sell flies, and really not that many people tie flies anymore. I mean, that's just another level of the pursuit. Sport that you can go to. I used to do it commercially, which was that's a whole different thing. You know, that was not the fun part. Cranking out thousands of flies, but not that many people actually tie flies anymore. But you can go there.
How often, now, be honest, do you go fishing and not catch anything?
Well, I'm generally in the trout fishing business. In trout fishing, it's rather rare to not catch a trout. There's a whole lot of them out there. And you usually can catch one. I mean, you know, I've done it for a while. So you get into some other species that are more like I've been involved with flats fishing, which means saltwater shallow fishing for bonefish and things like that. And if you have bad conditions, like clouds, so you can't see the fish coming. You can't sight fish them.
A lot of wind.
Yeah, wind's a big one. And then it's way possible to get skunked, yeah. And it happens, trout fishing, sure, but not so much. That's why, you know, trout fishing is how fly fishing started. It is the – whereas in some other species you can go after all any kind of fish with a fly. But trout's really the – you're going to do best with a fly because they eat insects and aquatic insects mostly that have no – you know, that just live in their whole existence is underwater. And you know, and so that's where the fly tying comes in, is you see an insect and you want to have the body just the right shade and this and that, because the fish can get pretty particular about eating just that exact insect.
How much of the appeal is the solitude of being outdoors? I was in Yellowstone last summer, and I would come across a river or a stream, and there were a ton of fly fishermen out there, all up and down the river, you know, scattered, not kind of right next to each other. Is that a bummer if there's a lot of fly fishermen out there, or not that big a deal?
Well, I just wrote an article for a magazine, and I said, well, yeah, that's a problem unless you got a fish attached to it. And then the ego part of the sport comes in, and you know, you feel pretty good when you're real screaming. But, yeah, in the a lot of places that I'm used to fish in New Mexico, Colorado, Argentina, we have a lot of solitude to fish and really try and avoid that kind of scenario, because yeah, for me it's about the solitude and being where that's the first thing I look at when I get to a piece of water is the footprints in the mud on the side, and see how many people have been there.
Taylor, is probably not going to come as a shock to you that we have a lot of callers. Patrick is calling from Attleboro, Massachusetts. Patrick, hello.
Hi, Wade.
Hi.
So I'm a relatively new fly fisherman, right? So out of Massachusetts, and I'm in my mid-30s, and I'm definitely not real great at it. I don't have a long history of fly fishing or fishing in general. And for me, it's the machination of the cast, of doing it right. And when people ask, I mean, my friends are like, what made you, like, what is it that keeps you going out? Even though you're not a great fly fisherman, and you're not catching fish every time you go out. And the only thing I can equate it to is, if you ever played golf and, you know, you hit the ball and sometimes it goes left and sometimes it goes right, but every now and then you hit it perfect and then you hit that sweet spot and it feels so good that you'll take another 10, you know, swings that don't go well just for that feeling of perfection, of hitting the sweet spot. And when you're casting, for me at least, when I cast out and I have it, and it, you know, the fly lays out perfect, you know, and you catch that fish, it's as if everything just went perfect at least once, and you're willing to go back out there and say, I don't need to catch a fish every time. I just enjoy the feeling of it. I'm looking for that feeling of the perfect cast, you know, and that's what it is for me. That's what keeps me coming back.
Even better than putting the ball on the green, huh?
Exactly. It's like getting a hole in one. You know, which I've never done either. So, mm-hmm.
Patrick, thanks for the call. Kirk is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Kirk, welcome to the show.
Hi, Wade. Thanks for letting me talk to you.
My pleasure.
I've been doing this a good while. I started fishing when I was 3, which was more than 50 years ago. and actually 60 years ago. But I came to fly fishing about 25 years ago and really love it. I want to assure you that even you can learn to do it. A buddy of mine and I put up a guided trip for two at a charity auction. It was bought by one 70-year-old woman to give to another 70-year-old woman for her birthday. We took them out and in 4 hours taught them to cast, and by the end of the day, they'd each caught four trout on a trout stream here in North Carolina. Women can pick it up easier than guys do because we have lots of problems with who's in charge. But I want to assure you that anybody can learn to do it.
Taylor, West Coast, East Coast. We just heard from two East Coast fishermen. Does it matter? Is the fishing better one place or the other?
Well, there's a lot of fishing in the East Coast. Probably the Rocky Mountains really have through. And this is a lot started since catch and release regulations went into use 30 years ago, maybe, really as good as any fishing in the world. And other places, Argentina, parts of Chile, have very good fishing too, but mostly because people have been throwing the fish back either by law or by choice or both, you know. And so that's created you know, this sport that's like it's like golf in a sense. If you're not eating the fish, it's a game.
Tell us truly, where are the best spots in the country to fly fish?
Well, that's – there's a lot of them.
Now, don't hold back your best.
The big rivers that are the big draws – would be the Madison in Montana. In Colorado has an endless number of great trout streams. New Mexico, San Juan, the Rio Grande where we fish. It's the list is just California's got a bunch of good trout streams. It's a long list. Then New York State has a lot of very good fishing. I put a chapter in the new version of my Instinctive book on fishing in New York State, and there's some very large trout in western New York.
Do trout fight like bass, or are they calmer, gentler?
They fight different than bass, but about any fish that gets at the end of a line is not going to be happy about it and pull the other way. And trout, some fight harder than others. A wild rainbow is probably the strongest of the fish. And they're the ones that jump and make the big a river runs through it. Didn't that 30-inch trout jump like well, they probably put a little charge under it or something. It looked like it jumped 3 feet out of the river.
Becky is calling from East Lansing, Michigan. Becky, hello.
Wade.
Hello.
I listen to NPR all the time. This is one of the few times I've actually picked up the phone to call in. I actually just turned 50 years old, and I've been fishing since I was five, but my mom and dad gave me a fly rod back when I was 38, and things just really took off from there. I think for me, fly fishing, it's actually, even though it's kind of connected with being a bourgeois sport, I find it to be, you know, probably one of the simplest sports to get engaged with. All you need is a rod and a couple flies and a river, and you're set. I think the other thing is, as folks have been talking, I certainly love the solitude. I spend a lot of days on the river by myself. I fish year-round. But it's probably the days with friends that I remember the most when I think back about, those sweet memories that we all have. And in fact, I fish with a lot of guys, and it's one of the few places where when we step in a river, any differences we have just melt away, and we are fishermen. And so I guess that's one of the things I really appreciate about the sport. I also, I was thinking back to one day a friend and I had been fishing a river during just an awful weather. It had been basically 4 days of cold rain, and we didn't catch much. We were leaving the river, and my friend said to me, you know, there are very few people in the world who get to do this. And it just struck me. And it was driving rain at the time that she said that. And it's true. It's one of those things that I feel absolutely blessed every time I get in a river and every time I get out. I would say if anybody's ever thought about taking up the sport, you know, do not be intimidated by all the terminology and, you know, tippet and line and different types of flies. Just get a rod in your hand and go out and start it.
Becky, do you teach your friends to fish, or do you find, do you make friends of fly fishermen?
Both. I've actually, a couple of friends I'd been friends with for many years. When I got into fly fishing, they wanted to try it too, and now we do it together. Other folks, I also fly tie, and I'm on bulletin boards, and I've connected actually through that source. We've, tried to solve a hatch problem together where we just, the white fly hatch in Michigan can be a real tricky one when it comes to catching trout. And so I've met, people through that mechanism. I'm involved with a lot of stream conservation efforts. That's also, a great time to meet and kind of meet people of like mind who really care about the resource and are spending their downtime to try to give something back.
Becky, thanks for the great call. Bob is calling from my hometown, Austin, Texas. Bob, welcome to the show.
Hi, Wade. It's good to hear you on the radio, homeboy. I appreciate it. Hey, I am an African-American fly fisher, and I can tell you there are not many of us. I fished Belize, Alaska, all up and down Mexico. I certainly fished the areas around Austin, and I tell you, I'm just absolutely addicted to it.
Now, why do you think there aren't more black fly fishermen?
I'm not sure. I think, there are a lot of elements of fly fishing that may not be all that appealing, and most of it's catch and release. And when I talked to my father-in-law about it, he said, you got to be crazy. You got to catch a fish and let him go. You got to catch him and eat him. So there's that kind of sentiment to it. But I think a lot of people are intimidated by the, all the things that may be involved in it. And I can tell you, too, that there's a little bit of, I fished Arkansas up in the Norfolk Rivers and at those sorts of places in the Ozarks in Arkansas. And in fact, I was fishing with a guide once, and we had to get permission from a landowner, an old guy who was sitting on the porch to fish his land. And once we got permission, the guide turned to me and said, you know what? I can guarantee you're the only black guy that's ever stepped foot on this river.
Taylor, we've had a call from a woman and a black man. Do you guide many of or of both? We have very quickly.
Well, certainly we take a lot. We love guiding women because, as I wrote in my instinctive book, they're not all bound up with being top rod and don't have the tension in their arm that really kind of ruins a cast like a man.
This is On Point. I'm Wade Goodwin in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking fly fishing. It's called the Contemplative Man's Recreation. I'd like to be a contemplative man. Pass me that rod. My guest is fly fishing store owner, guide, and author Taylor Strike. He's based in Taos, New Mexico, and he was kind enough to make the drive to the studio in Santa Fe with us today. Here's a scene from the 1992 movie A River Runs Through It, where the narrator, the elder son of a Presbyterian minister, described how his father taught him the art of casting flies.
My brother and I learned to cast Presbyterian style on a metronome. He began each session with the same instruction. Casting is an art that is performed on a four-count rhythm between 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock. If he had had his way, nobody who did not know how to catch a fish would be allowed to disgrace a fish by catching it.
Taylor, did this movie bring a lot of new fly fishermen and women to the sport?
Basically, in the fly fishing business, there's before the movie and after the movie. I mean, I've been involved with it a long time. So I'm like before the movie guy, you know. But it really created a lot of new fly fishermen, yeah, and a lot of interest and renewed interest in the sport for sure.
And it was good for the sport?
I think so. I mean, you know, you get in that like you were mentioning earlier about seeing a bunch of people on a stream, and then it's, if that's where you want to fish, and there's a, you know, that you may not be happy about that, but obviously it's good for the business part. But environmentally, you know, fly fishermen do a lot and contribute a lot by the nature of the generally people that get involved. And as you kind of get involved with the water, and it tends to make you a steward of where you fish. And so, you know, I know I personally am involved with a lot of different environmental groups and directions that, you know, I happen to be the one who's there on the scene a lot. And so I got a lot to report.
Obviously, how talented you are a caster is an important aspect of how good, how often you catch fish. How hard is it to catch trout? Are they smart?
I think I put in, wrote somewhere, they're dumb as a box of rocks until they get fished for. And once they've been, that's the thing about catch and release fishing. Once you release a fish, then it sees the next time it sees a fly, it's going to go, oh, I'm not so sure. So
have you seen that look in a trout's eyes? I'm not so sure.
Yeah, all the time. They actually come up usually and look at the fly and give it a very close inspection and then turn her and swim the other way. And you know that fish has been caught probably recently.
Does that make you feel bad about yourself?
That would be a little strong, but it certainly – it makes you switch flies.
Yes, and you blame your fly, don't you?
Well, it's much better to blame your fly than yourself. You don't want to the good thing about fly fishing is it has many, many built-in excuses, so you don't have to take responsibility for fishing poorly.
I'm just going to say there was a lot of genius fish in the river the day I was fishing. Ray is calling from East Lansing, Michigan. Another call from East Lansing, Michigan. Ray, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I was just calling because at that point, before Becky got on from East Lansing, I hadn't heard anybody from the best trout fishing state in the United States, Michigan. So I had to call. The reason I called, actually picked up the phone today, first-time caller, is just because I'm a vehement conservationist also. I believe in no kill and catch and release and barbless hooks. But one thing I take exception to, and especially in Michigan, is the fact that fly fishermen have exclusive rights on certain parts of rivers. In Michigan, there are stretches of rivers that is in the Department of Natural Resources rule book that specifically states fly fishing only. And I have fly fished. I have four fly rods, and you know, I guide some here too, but you know, tell me tell me to release the fish, tell me no kill, tell me barbless hooks, tell me single hook, but don't tell me how to fish them, then don't tell me what kind of equipment I have to use, as long as I play by the rules. You know, we all pay these taxes to have these wonderful natural resources maintained, and yet some people in government are telling us, you know, what kind of equipment we have to use. And if you still look, you know, and I totally agree about your, all of your callers, the Serenity and everything. I can go on just about any one of my favorite streams in Michigan and fish all day and never see another person. It's absolutely fantastic.
Thank you, Ray. Taylor, Ray is complaining about stretches of water that are reserved for fly fishermen.
Yeah, that's kind of elitist, isn't it? well, there's
What's the thinking?
Well, the thinking is often that, you know, a lot of artificial, like a spinner or, you know, often has triple hooks, and triple hooks are pretty – it can be hard to release a fish. Or if you're fishing with bait, the bait is likely to be swallowed by the fish and then it can't be released. So that's usually a tool for being able to release fish. Now, a lot of places like in New Mexico, for instance, it's usually a single barbless hook is the no bait fishing, but you can use a different kind of artificial, you know, a spinning lure. But as long as it's got a single barbless hook that you can easily release the fish. So it certainly can be done. But, you know, there's flies that can be you kill fish. It's usually by handling, poor handling of a fish to be released. And there should be really more schooling on that. And when we guide people, you know, that's part of the operation. Hopefully we catch one early in the day and then we show people how to, you know, release and sometimes revive the fish.
Terry is calling from Watertown, New York. Terry, hello.
How you doing, Wade?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I just wanted to share my personal philosophy on casting. I'm a musician, and the secret to casting is that your backstroke needs to equal your forward stroke. And, of course, as more line goes out, that backstroke or that forward stroke becomes longer. And in the same respect that I count rhythm as a musician, I count my rhythm when I'm casting, to make sure that my backstroke equals my forward stroke. I just wanted to share that. If there's any musicians out there that want to learn to fly cast, it's an intuitive thing, and it helps to helps the learning process.
Thank you, Terry. Taylor, I do the same thing with my putting. Try to get my backstroke and my front stroke the same length.
I like those comparisons with golf because it's something I say in my book is that, you know, in golf doesn't – I think everybody gets lessons, right? I mean, that's part of the MO. But in fly casting, it's a rarity. And most people, when they're self-taught, like we'll take somebody fishing who's been self-taught in for many, many years. And we have to try and back them up and get them in a more efficient motion. So I've often compared it to golf lessons. Go ahead and get a fly casting lesson.
Well,
start on the right foot.
Yeah, I'm self-taught, and the friends I play with have to avert their eyes when I swing. Do you prefer to teach novices?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the longer I've done this, and it's been a long time, I think that's true because nothing scares us more than an expert. We've done this guiding job for a long, long time, and the novice, you're opening up this world, and people are just like usually, almost always, just instantly enchanted by this thing, and you've given this, and you're starting with a blank slate as far as the teaching, the physical parts of the cast. For sure, you're working with like I say, a blank slate there. So you can really make start them in the right direction and feel like you've really done some good.
James is calling from Springfield, Missouri. James, hello.
Hi, thanks, Wade. You could not have timed this interview any better. I started fly fishing when I was about 11 or 12 in Alaska. We go down to rivers and lakes for lake trout and rainbows and even Arctic grayling, which will hit a bear hook if they're hungry enough. This Sunday, I live in Springfield, Missouri now. This Sunday, we're going out on a guided fly fishing tour with my daughter and my girlfriend because neither one of them have ever fly fished before in their life. My daughter is 14. So I figure if I'm going to get her hooked on something, it's going to be about now.
That's great. Taylor, any recommendations?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's 14 is like the dream age. I think I wrote somewhere, it's just like when you see a kid at 13, 14, 15, 16, and you hand them a fly rod and you tell them what to do and they do it, you're stunned and you realize it's, you know, that human abilities are like all downhill from that point, because it's just shocking how well teenagers do at something, maybe not a whole lot, but certainly at picking up something physical like a fly cast. And it's a beautiful thing to watch a teenager learn to fly cast.
Ed is calling from Franklin, Virginia. Ed, hello.
Hello, Wade.
Hey.
My father was against fly fishing all his life. I mean, he hated them. He hated the idea of the rivers being closed off. He hated the idea of not being able to fish wherever he wanted to with a worm. And he turned into a guide in his 60s after he retired and worked as a guide up at Long Island, up next to the Canadian border above Sugarloaf. And a gentleman from White Plains, New York, who my father was guiding, said, "Lester, we're going to teach you how to fly fish this summer." My father said, "No, you're not." He said, "I don't care about it. Don't want to know anything about it." Well, he passed my father a $300 fly rod and said, "Lester, let's go fishing." And he took him out on the lake, and he taught him how to fly fish. And I didn't know about any of this stuff, and I went up to Maine to go on vacation and help him out at the house. And his sister was real sick, and he said, "I want to go see her today." And I said, "Okay, let's go." So we headed down through Carabasset Valley and came up on the Carabasset River. And there's only 3 or 4 inches of water in the middle of the summer. And he looked over and he said, "You know," he said, "if we stopped here," he said, "I think probably I could catch a fish with my fly rod." I said, "With what?" He said, "With my fly rod." I said, "Dad, you hate fly fishing." "Oh, no, no," he said, "I really like fly fishing." He said, "It's really easy for me," and he said, "I can go and fly fish just about anywhere."
That's a great story. Mike is calling from Stoneham, Massachusetts.
How you doing, Wade?
I'm doing fine, Mike.
Just wanted to comment, I've fly fished and tied flies for 50 years. On the fly tying end of it, I've traveled all over the world to shows and given exhibitions and demonstrations and so forth. And love to fly fish, because a lot of times trout and salmon are found in places of great beauty and solitude. Although I feel I have to comment that the internet has really put a bite on the solitude end of things in a lot of places. There's just almost too much information out there. And one other tough thing I wanted to bring up, fly fishing only stretches. My experience in life has been, if it's a fly fishing only stretch, the water's taken care of pretty good. There's going to be some fish there. Places that are open to spinning and other forms of fishing generally are crapped up with monofilament, sometimes trash. And the resident fish in that stretch take a beating. And just wanted to say it's really good to hear something other than basketball, baseball, and football on the radio, and I really enjoy the program.
Thanks, Mike Taylor. You agree with Mike that the internet has made it difficult to find solitude?
Well, it's made it – when you're in the fly fishing business, it's kind of frustrating because – you know, and being an author and having books that you know have to be approved and edited and sold and everything, where you can put about anything on the internet, and so there's a lot of misinformation, you know, that's easily applied and read and then people follow that and that's where things turn ugly sometimes.
Chris is calling from Concord. Chris, hello.
Hi, Wade. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
I just wanted to quickly, Taylor would probably agree with me here, talk about the importance of local fly shops in the fly fishing world. Nowadays, a lot of them are closing their doors due to, you know, competition from whether it be a store like Bass Pro or Cabela's. But the true local fly shop these days is something that really should be treasured, and it's somewhere where fly fishermen, new and expert, can gain really good information. And the guys that work there, men, women that work there, are some of the most caring, devoted fishermen out there. And it's really a shame that some of them are closing their doors, but the ones that are still around, I think, should really be treasured.
That's a very nice call, Taylor. I'm sure you agree.
Yeah. My son and I, my son Nick, in our shop, we have, you know, obviously local knowledge of our area, but we're also, my son's the president of Trout Unlimited in the area, and we do a lot of concerts. So we get very community involved.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, Taylor, it's been a pleasure learning so much from you. I want to thank you for joining us today. Taylor Stride is a fly fishing god, shop owner, and author of the book Instinctive Fly Fishing. He joined us from Santa Fe. I'd like to thank all of the producers who helped me over the last 2 weeks. If you want to see something remarkable, you ought to see a veteran production crew take a novice host like myself through a two-hour show day after day. We'll do it one last time. I'm Wade Goodwin, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.